What more do you want from me?
I don't want peace. I want problems, always.
The hunt is on, and you're the prey.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of Office Hours with your brother, Professor Carl Tone Jones. I am Professor Carl Tone Jones, and I'm back, baby. I know it's been a few weeks, more than a few weeks, and you haven't really heard my voice. And you know, it's been an interesting couple of weeks, and I'm going to break it down a little bit to y'all. You know, y'all my people, so. And I really want to thank everybody who is still, you know, I want to thank everybody who is still pulling up and still part of the, you know, all Office Hour crew, you know, those of you who are loyal and faithful listeners. And, yeah, let's, you know, and let's get it, man. First and foremost, you know, shout out to Philly Fridays. Today is Philly Friday, so shout out. And you're rocking with us live on Fet Life Station at FetLifeStation.com, and you're also pulling up and catching us on the True Stories Podcast Network. That's the True Stories Podcast Network. And you know, I really wanted to get into, you know, what actually happened, because there's a real good reason as to why I have not been here. And you know, I had suffered a setback health wise, and I want to be clear about something, because I always talk about, you know, brothers taking care of our health and focused. So I was focused on my health, but unfortunately, I contracted an infection during the white water rafting outing that, you know, was work related back in early August. And I had been carrying that infection in my blood for about 2 months, over 2 months. And it got the best of me to the point where I literally had to be admitted to the hospital. And you know, I'm not gonna lie to y'all, man, I did not realize how dark the situation was until I came home, you know. But your brother, you know, had to go through a few things, and I'm not gonna say that I was, you know, on the doorsteps of the upper room, but I can see the doorway from where I was. So, you know, I want to thank everybody who held me down, my family first and foremost, who actually convinced me to get checked out. Because unfortunately, brothers, and we take this to the chin, a lot of us will, you know, forsake our own health because we believe that others still benefit from our presence and our utility. And I'm not absolved of that particular fault, and almost to a flaw, to a fault, you know, that's one of the things that's taking us out of here. So I want to thank my family for getting on me and motivating me to go get checked out. And fortunately, I did. Probably if I'd have waited a couple more days, I'm not sure your brother would be here, you know, because it took a lot to get me back on track. I'll just say that. So home, I'm back in the lab, and let's get ready to do what we do. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, the one thing we do, we don't stir away from. We don't stir away from the truth. And a lot of us are currently looking at the landscape. You got the government shut down. And one of the biggest topics of discussion right now is the fact that we're about to roll upon the holiday months, specifically, you know, one of the foodie holidays and Thanksgiving. But a lot of people, a lot of families who are dependent on SNAP benefits most likely will not get their SNAP benefits. And this SNAP has been a mess for a little while, man, because, you know, there's been a lot of things, and I suspect some insider corruption going on there. You can't really prove it, but they can't disprove what I'm saying either. I happen to know personally a few people who have had their SNAP benefits stolen from them, and it had to be an inside job. It just was not one of those swipe machines, because I know a few people who had their cards replaced, but they were, other people were still able to utilize their benefits and steal them. And they put a policy back in December of 2024 stating that the federal government will no longer replenish or replace stolen SNAP benefits, you know, food stamps. So there's been a lot of things going on with that in terms of, you know, the levels of corruption. And it's, you know, when it's poor people, don't nobody care. So there's not going to be no rugged investigation or thorough investigation for which they, you know, do a deep dive to find out who's actually stealing these things. And it's a billion dollar, you know, I don't want to call it an industry, but definitely a multi-billion dollar program. So there's profits to be made from those who are comfortable taking from the less fortunate. And let's be clear, in a capitalistic society, especially when you have people who have no ethics, that becomes more and more likely every day. So, you know, I'm working on a few things with some people. Shout out to my brother Suave. You know, we're kind of working on something right now. So we'll let y'all know in the upcoming weeks, you know, what the game plan is. But, you know, we're trying to make sure that we put ourselves in position to help some families this holiday season. You know, so keep that in mind with us. All right. So one of the things that, you know, like I said, that the healing situation with me, man, I just want to tell y'all, man, it makes you put a whole lot of things in perspective about it. Like, sometimes we get caught up in petty shit, and I got the fight in me, but sometimes, man, you when you go through something like that, it really makes you, it really helps you to see what the fight is. Like, the real fights. Man, I know, you know, things where your ego may be a part of it, or your feelings may be involved. No. When you're fighting for your life, you really get to see some things. So, you know, it might be a cooler, calmer version of me, but I'm still me, damn it. I am still me. So don't get it twisted now. So, you know, as we go to the next part. All right. Almost timed that right. So, I want to jump into one of these clips, man, that I got, because one of the things that I was able to, one of these things I was able to do is, I want to I've been reacting to a lot of these subreddit posts lately, and I really, really, really would like to deal with one of these from a perspective of actually having a whole time to watch the whole thing. So, you know, I'm going to speed it up a little bit, but I really want y'all to pay attention to this real quick, this reaction, because this particular clip and a lot of these Reddit reactions on that are read on YouTube, a lot of them are a lot of those Reddit joints are really like red pill redemption stories. So I want y'all to peep this one real quick, because this one is interesting. And like I said, I wanted to make sure we get to check out the whole joint. So check this out.
Narrative.
The argument had been building for weeks. Small things at first. Her phone always face down on the counter. Late nights at the gym that somehow never resulted in her actually working out. The way she'd pull away when I tried to kiss her goodnight. I'm not stupid. I've been around long enough to recognize the signs. That Tuesday evening, I came home from my shift at the warehouse to find her in the kitchen, scrolling through her phone with that little smile. The one she used to give me. Past tense. We need to talk, I said, setting my keys on the counter. She didn't even look up. About what? About whoever you're texting. That got her attention. Her head snapped up, eyes wide for just a second before the defensiveness kicked in. Excuse me? Are you seriously accusing me of something right now? I pulled out my phone and opened the photos I'd taken that morning. Screenshots of messages I'd seen on her laptop before she closed it. Nothing explicit, but enough. Inside jokes with someone named Derek. Late night conversations. Plans to meet up. Who's Derek? Her face went pale, then red. You went through my stuff? Are you kidding me right now? Answer the question. He's a friend from college. We reconnected on social media.
Now, I want y'all to peep something real quick, right? I want you to peep the immediate attempt at gaslighting this particular... I want y'all to peep the immediate... you know, like the immediate attempt at gaslighting, you know. She got caught red-handed. This is called emotional cheating at this point, right? Because you can't prove that she physically cheated. She got caught. And the first thing she did was, you know, she wanted to come back on privacy issues. As if he violated her privacy. Meanwhile, she's violating her vows for, you know, her marriage, which is insane. But I digress.
It's nothing. I laughed. Actually laughed. Nothing. Right. Friends don't text each other at 2 a.m. about how much they miss seeing each other. She stood up, chair scraping against the tile. You have no right to invade my privacy like that. This is exactly why we have problems.
See what I mean? And this is the bait and switch. This is the bait and switch. It's very important that you fellas understand what the bait and switch is. This is how a lot of women, and women are much better at arguing than men. This is how a lot of women switch the responsibility, or they switch the focus of the conversation to, and this is when they go on defense, but they go on offense by swapping and switching and putting you on defense by trying to get you to defend a position that does not exist. All right. Saying that he's violating her privacy totally neglects the fact or negates the fact that you're cheating and you got caught. Cheating. All right.
You're controlling and paranoid. I'm paranoid because you gave me every reason to be. I kept my voice level. Calm. I learned a long time ago that staying cool drove people like her crazy. You want to talk about problems? Let's talk about how you haven't touched me in 3 weeks. How you suddenly need to go to Target at 9 p.m. How your gym sessions somehow take 3 hours. Maybe I don't want to be touched by someone who doesn't trust me. Trust is earned. You stopped earning it about 2 months ago. She grabbed her wine glass and took a long drink, buying time. I could see her brain working, trying to figure out how to spin this. Fine. Yes, I've been talking to Derek. He actually listens to me. He makes me feel appreciated. Something you haven't done in years. There it was. The shift. Now I was the bad guy. I work 50 hours a week to keep a roof over our heads. I do the grocery shopping because you can't be bothered. I cook dinner 4 nights out of 7. But
now, I want y'all to understand what's happening here, right? Now, from the sounds of things, she don't have a damn job. But he is still maintaining a lot of the domestic duties on top of working 50 hours a week. That is wild turkey. But one of the things that you'll see, you're seeing here is the, like I said, more gaslighting. It's a whole string of gaslighting and bait and switch. And I've heard a woman tell me this before. You need to stop before you chase me into another man's arms. And this is what I mean by, you know, the red pill origin stories, right? And that's what this is, red pill origin stories. Right now, he's not talking like somebody who is operating his red pill energy. He's talking like somebody who's operating in his blue pill energy. We call it simp energy. And so, you know, these are the origin stories of the red pill, you know, the red pill origin stories that sort of like, you know, change the arc of his future. So,
sure, I'm the one who doesn't appreciate you. She slammed the glass down. You want to know the truth? Fine. Here's the truth. Something in her voice changed. Sharper, meaner. Derek was my boyfriend before you. We dated for 2 years. And honestly, she looked me straight in the eyes. He was better in bed than you'll ever be. I still think about it. There. You happy now? The room went silent except for the hum of the refrigerator. I didn't yell. Didn't throw anything. Didn't.
And I want you to see what just happened. Dr. Jordan Peterson, right? A famous Canadian professor who is, you know, world-renowned sociologist and goes around and has these debates and conversations concerning the male-female dynamics in regards to how we relate to each other, speaks about this and speaks about how men are physically violent, right? When we get violent, it's physical. We react, we, you know, Hulk smash, we destroy shit. We tear shit up. We be on, right? However, women's violence is verbal. And because their violence is verbal, their tongues are like swords. Now, you just heard what she said to him. She literally told him that she can't stop thinking about her ex, and he was better in bed than he would ever be. So, you know, that's why I gave one of those, because this is crazy work. But, digress.
Didn't give her the reaction she was clearly expecting. Instead, I nodded slowly. Okay, that threw her off. Okay, that's all you have to say. What else is there to say? I walked past her toward the bedroom. You just told me everything I needed to know. Where are you going? Packing. She followed me down the hall. Wait, what? You're leaving? Over this. I pulled my duffel bag out of the closet and started grabbing clothes. Jeans, shirts, socks, the essentials. You just compared me to your ex and told me he was better. In what world did you think I'd stick around after that? I was angry. People say things when they're angry. Yeah, they do. I zipped up the bag. They say what they've been thinking all along.
See what I mean? She was angry, so she said something that she knew would hurt him. And I don't give a damn what kind of man you are. When your woman, like most men will ask dumbass questions, like questions you don't want the answers to. You know, am I better than anybody else in bed and all that? But when she actually is the one who initiates that response, and she says it in a spiteful way, I don't give, your ego is going to take a tremendous hit on that one. You're going to suffer tremendously. So I commend this man, because a lot of women have lost their lives triggering a man to this point. And for some men, their libido, their sex drive is what defines their manhood. I ain't saying me. I'm more of a complete man than that, but I had to get there. And a lot of men don't ever get there. So, and brothers, you know what I'm talking about. A lot of y'all right now are walking around hoping and praying that thing never gets to a point where you can't get it up, because you don't know what you would do in terms of your identity, because your whole identity is tied to your eggplant. So I'm just saying, she's lucky she's not in the upper room talking about me earlier.
Tone shifted again. Softer now. Manipulative. Baby, come on. Let's just calm down and talk about this. I didn't mean it. I was just trying to hurt you because you hurt me by going through my messages. I grabbed my toiletries from the bathroom. Toothbrush. Deodorant. Razor. You hurt me way before tonight. Tonight you just made it easy for me to leave. You're being ridiculous. Where are you even going to go? Not your problem anymore. I walked back through the living room, bag over my shoulder. She was standing there in the middle of the kitchen, arms crossed, face twisted between anger and disbelief. If you walk out that door, don't expect me to be here when you decide to come crawling back. I stopped at the door and turned to look at her one last time. I won't be coming back. Ever. Enjoy thinking about Derek. I walked out and closed the door behind me. My phone started buzzing before I even got to my truck. I ignored it. Started the engine. Pulled out of the driveway. 3 years of marriage. Gone in one sentence. And honestly, I felt lighter than I had in months. I called my buddy Trevor on the way. Hey man, I know it's late, but can I crash on your couch for a few days? Yeah, of course. Everything okay. It will be. That night, lying on Trevor's couch in my work clothes, I made a decision. No going back. No second chances. No letting her manipulate me into thinking I was overreacting.
And that's a key point right there. And fellas, how many times, right? And I think I'm going to put the, get the sounds back on, man, because, you know, it's a little dry. And, you know, we liven it up in here. But how many times have you been in a situation where you slowly lose yourself in a relationship? You slowly lose yourself in regards to, you know, because you feel as though it's your obligation and your duty to make that woman happy. How many times have we all done that? We've all done that. And many of us have wasted many years. And it takes men a lot longer to recover from situations than women. Women will go on. You know how many times I have broken up with women, and I haven't had like a whole lot of relationships. But how many times I've broken up with women and find out within the first week or two they're out there smutting it up with somebody. Like their first react, like they literally can lay in the sack with somebody the next day. A lot of us fellas, we need to decompress. You know, especially those of us who actually thought that they were in a loving and caring relationship till it fell apart. So, you know, this is just, you know, more food for the, you know, more fodder for the fire. But here you go.
She'd shown me exactly who she was, and I believed her. Trevor's apartment was small but clean. One bedroom, a couch that had seen better days, and a kitchen barely big enough for two people.
Oh, and shout out to his homie. Brothers, this is why you need the brotherhood. Because we need to be in situations where our people can, you know, take us in, take care of us, be a support. And this is a situation where, you know, his mans was looking out for him. You know, had a couch for him, whatever. You know what I'm saying? So, good stuff.
People. He worked nights as a security guard. So most mornings he was asleep when I left for my warehouse shift. The first thing I did the next morning was call a lawyer. Found one through a quick search. Nothing fancy. His name was Mr. Garrett, and his office was in a strip mall between a nail salon and a tax prep place. How long were you married? He asked, pen ready over a yellow legal pad. 3 years. Together for 5 total. Any kids? No. Property? We rent. Lease is in both our names. Ends in 4 months. He nodded, scribbling notes. That makes things simpler. Any joint accounts? Checking account. About 2,000 in it. Savings says maybe 500. I'd recommend opening your own account today and transferring your half. Legal and clean. Do you have proof of the affair? I showed him the screenshots. He looked them over, expressionless. These help, but they're not explicit enough to prove infidelity in court. Doesn't matter much in a no-fault state anyway. What matters is we file first and we file fast.
And I want y'all to also peep something else too, which is a reoccurring theme in a lot of these Reddits that are being rehashed on YouTube. One of the things that has come about is the moment of clarity when these men realize that they have reached their limits in regards to being disrespected. And, you know, I've talked to women, I have brothers that have talked to women before. They thoroughly believe that you're supposed to, as a man, just take their abuse. And we say, well, what do you expect for us to do? We just, you know, you're a man. We expect you to just take it while we emotionally, you know, just eviscerate you and destroy your character and assassinate it. And, you know, we expect you to just take it. But these are steps, these right here, these are a clear, clear lessons in which that man said the line got crossed and that was it. There's no retreat, no return. So this is why, then, you know, that statement, that was it. It wasn't no reconciliation. There was no you heard of baby, let's talk. I was just mad. Oh, fuck that. My man was out. My man wasn't trying to hear none of that shit. You know, my man bounced. He was literally like,
me personally, I wouldn't take this level of disrespect.
I can have papers ready by Friday. Do it. My phone had been buzzing nonstop since I left. 43 messages by noon. I skimmed through them on my lunch break, sitting in my truck eating a sandwich from the gas station. The messages followed a pattern. First came the anger. You're being childish. This is exactly why we have problems. Running away like always. Then the guilt trips. I can't believe you'd throw away our marriage over one fight. After everything we've been through, I thought you loved me. By evening, desperation. Please just talk to me. We can fix this. I didn't mean what I said. I responded once. Simple and direct. My lawyer will contact you soon. All communication goes through him from now on. She called immediately. I declined. She called again. I blocked the number.
See? They say when a woman's done, no. When a man's fed up, it's over. Because that man realized he sacrificed his happiness. He sacrificed years off his life. Think about the fact that if you're working 50 hours a week, right? Let's just say you live 45 minutes to an hour from your job. Not only have you worked 50 hours a week, you can add another 10 hours just in getting there and coming back home. And that not, and sometimes that hour, that lunch break that's in there somewhere adds to that. So you literally spend 11 hours on the plant. And you, 11 hours on the plant, an hour to, an hour from. And you're dead tired. And you have a woman tell you, you have not been giving me attention. And this is the shit I'm talking about. I'm going to get into this a little bit later on. Y'all want to see, because I got something else, you know, after this. But shout out to this dude, and shout out to a lot of these men who have made it plain. Made it plain. And the gaslighting and the manipulation, the sign language, Kevin Samuels made famous. He wasn't the one that created it, but shout out to BGS Itmore. And he said him and a conversation with Yala Van Zant was when they came up, when he coined the term sign language. I think it was one part that Kevin added to it. But shout out to the Godfather for telling us about the sign language, the shame, the insults, the guilt, and the need to be right. And also looking at the concept, the fact that more men are making this choice. We'll talk about that a little later on, too.
Trevor got home around 2 in the morning. I was still awake, scrolling through job listings on my phone. The warehouse paid the bills, but barely. If I was starting over, maybe it was time to aim higher. You good? He asked, dropping his keys on the counter. Getting there. She's still blowing up your phone? Locked her. He grabbed a beer from the fridge and sat down in the recliner. Good. That's the move. My ex tried the same thing when I left. 2 weeks of baby please, and I'll change before she finally got the message. How'd you handle it? Stop responding. They want a reaction. Don't give them one. Smart advice. Friday came. Mr. Garrett called me at work. Papers are filed. She'll be served on Monday. Expect it to get messy. She already made it messy. They always do. But you're in a good position. No kids, short marriage, no major assets. We push this through. You could be done in 3 months. Monday afternoon, my phone lit up with a restricted number. I let it ring, then a text from a number I didn't recognize. This is messed up. You're really divorcing me without even trying to work things out? After 3 years. I saved the number as do not answer and deleted the message. At work, people started noticing changes. I showed up early, stayed late when they needed someone for overtime. My supervisor, Kyle, pulled me aside during a break. You all right, man? You've been grinding harder than usual. Just refocusing. This about your wife? Trevor mentioned you've been staying with him. I didn't elaborate. Going through some things. Work helps. He nodded. Well, keep it up. We've got a lead position opening next month if you're interested. Pays $3 more an hour. I'll take it. $3.
So, and I'm going to let him get into, you know, what that means financially for him. But this is something else that a lot of men, fellas, you don't notice about yourselves. And specifically in the Metro Focus Society, the Black community, where a lot of us have been taught and trained to operate through the lens and the feelings and the emotional chambers of women. As men, when you get to a point where you're a man, you process things differently. You process pain differently. You process betrayal differently. Most men get quiet. Most men, because there's no outlast, there's no circle of brothers that you can go to. And honestly speaking, we're not really designed to do that anyway, because our thoughts have to begin. We have to understand the rationale behind this. It's not that I'm mad, but why am I mad? What were the key focal points that made me mad? And then when you've been able to dissect the rationale of why you're in that situation and how you got in that situation, this is how you learn from those circumstances and situations. And just like Trevor, you know, Trevor told him, listen, man, don't respond to nothing she says. Don't respond to anything, because what she's trying to gaslight you in so many words. And, you know, I was told by the great Professor James Small one time when I was going through something with somebody. And this was a guy, but, you know, it was like social media beef. And he said, brother, the best thing you could do for them is starve them of his attention. Like, he needs your attention like people need air. You starve them. You suffocate them by not giving them your attention, not responding. And that was some of the best advice I'd ever gotten. And I used that for a lot of other situations now. And that's what these men are doing here. Not responding. Blocking numbers. Marking numbers in their phone. Do not answer so they don't get tripped up. You know, because there's always a trick card in the place. You know, people get trying to trick you out of your position. They ain't going for it. So shout out to them.
$1 an hour was an extra $500 a month. That was the difference between barely scraping by and actually having breathing room. That evening, I went to the bank and opened my own account. Transferred exactly half of what was in our joint checking. $1,000. It wasn't much, but it was mine. My phone buzzed again. Another unknown number. You took money out of our account? Are you serious right now? I smiled and blocked the number. Trevor came home that night with pizza. We sat on his couch watching some action movie. And for the first time in months, I felt something close to peace. You know what's crazy? I said between slices. What? I don't miss her. Not even a little bit.
And that's another thing that's coming up, y'all. And I, you know, we tried to tell women this before. It's to a point where men are feeling the indifference, and the indifference towards the manipulation of dealing with a lot of women. The indifference is bringing men peace. And a lot of brothers, you know, they ain't just brothers, but black men go through this more than anybody else. A lot of times people try to force you, you know, try to peer pressure you into relationships, and you need to be with a woman to balance you out and all this other bullshit. No, a lot of times you just need to be able to maintain your own faculties. And as a society is bad because societies need families, right? But in this particular society, the whole notion and concept of family is toxic, so toxic, right? Westernized culture. And we all model ourselves in Western culture. So I don't want to hear anybody talking about traditional cultures. This and nobody, even the traditional culture people operate in Westernized versions of the cultures. So one, you know, and I'm, you know, like I said, I got some things to talk about. So I'm gonna get through another couple minutes just so y'all get the gist of this. All right. But, For the most part, I'll play for a few more minutes so y'all can hear a little bit more. Then I got something else we want to get into. So hold tight.
I miss the idea of being married. The stability. But her specifically? No. That's how you know you made the right call. He was right. My lawyer called Wednesday. She's making noise about wanting to talk directly. I told her no. Everything goes through me. She also asked if you consider counseling. Absolutely not. That's what I figured. I'll let her lawyer know. By the end of the second week, the messages slowed down. She tried a few more times through mutual friends, but I shut that down fast. One text to everyone we knew together. If she asked you to talk to me, the answer is no. This is between me and my lawyer now. Clear. Direct. No room for interpretation. I spent my evenings looking at rental houses in better neighborhoods. Places with two bedrooms, so I could have space to breathe. Maybe even get a dog. I'd always wanted one, but she'd said no. Too much work. Funny how many little compromises I'd made that I was just now realizing. Trevor noticed me browsing listings one night. You thinking about getting your own place already? Eventually. You've been great, but I need to stay in on my own. No rush, man. Stay as long as you need. But I didn't need my own space. Not because Trevor wasn't good company. Because I needed to prove to myself I could do this. Rebuild from scratch. And I would. 2 months went by faster than I expected. I found a place to rent with a guy from work named Carson. 3-bedroom house in a decent neighborhood, 15 minutes from the warehouse. We split the rent down the middle, which left me with enough to actually save a little each month. First time in years I had money left over after bills. Carson was quiet, kept to himself mostly. He worked the morning shift while I worked afternoons, so we barely saw each other. Perfect roommate situation. The house had a small backyard, which meant I finally got that dog I wanted. Found him at the shelter. Some kind of terrier mix, maybe 3 years old. The shelter staff said his previous owners moved and couldn't take him. They're lost. I named him Rookie. Work was going better too. I got that lead position Cal mentioned. $3 more an hour plus occasional bonuses for hitting productivity targets. It wasn't a fortune, but it felt good to be moving up instead of just treading water. My lawyer called every couple weeks with updates. The divorce was moving along. She tried to contest a few things, drag it out, but there...
Yeah, and I almost missed it, but notice how he's leveling up. Notice how he's becoming more productive. And fellas, that's a lesson we need to learn. I know sometimes we go through it. We go through depression. We go through anxiety, you know, a lot of times, emotionally shocked because, you know, you put your all into a situation that did not work. But once you move into and become more red pill, one of the things that you do is you become a lot more productive because you can then rationale. You logically, you can break down, you can epitomize your relationship and understand why it broke apart, why it fell apart. And you won't be blaming yourself. You'll pick up the pieces for yourself. And you, some people immerse themselves into their work. Bottom line is, man, you know, you can just make yourself a better man, put yourself in a better position, and take a lot of that anguish and anger and apply it, if it's anger at that point. Because sometimes, like I said, it gets to a point, a level of indifference for those of us who are not, you know, trapped in our feelings and emotions. Like I said, matrifocal society generates a lot of men who are wrapped up in their feelings and emotions, and that is not a good thing, you know. That's like putting a hair trigger on a nuclear bomb, man. You know, any moment that shit can go off. So, you know, we have to, but this is what you know, you see the production pick up. You see the man starting to manifest now. He's starting to do things he's put off. You ever realize how restricted a lot of you get in relationships, brothers? But she doesn't have to give up anything, but you, but for fear of losing her, you give up everything. So I'm a chill with that right there, because there's something else that I want to talk about, a few things if we got time, but there's something else I really want to talk about. And this is something that I put together a few years ago, right? And I want y'all to check this out. I call this the interview.
Fellas, have you ever been in a situation where you're really interested in a woman and you're trying to gauge her interest for you, but she keeps throwing obstacles in the way? She's generating new standards, new boundaries, and she's not totally transparent regarding how she feels for you. Whether you're dating this person, whether you've been friend zoned by this person, you should consider giving her the interview. So, here's what we do. You ask her, hypothetically speaking, if she was ever in a situation where she needed to gain employment and she got a call from her dream job, the job she's been waiting for all her life, and she's called into this interview. The person sitting across from her during this interview tells her that she meets all of the necessary requirements to get the job, but asks her, would she be willing to work extra hours Would she be willing to work extra shifts? Would she be willing to come in from home on certain occasions to get the job done? Now, typically speaking, because this is her dream job, she will answer yes to all of those particular questions. Why? Because it's her dream job. She's worked her whole life to get here. Then you go and say, okay, fine. They say, well, listen, we have other candidates that we have to interview, but we'll be in touch with you in a few weeks. Now, she has another interview that day. Now, this interview is at a department store, second shift manager. It pays decent money. And they tell her, not only is she qualified for the job, but she's hired. But first, they must know if she's going to be willing to pull extra shifts, if she's going to be willing to come in on days off and work extra hours. Now, typically speaking, because she doesn't have the dream job yet, the response has been she will take the job because it's available and she needs the money. However, in doing so, she will have a hard time giving this job her full effort, her full undivided attention, because it's not her dream job. She's still waiting on her dream job. And because of that, she cannot be fully committed to this particular job.
So that's the interview. Why did I play that? And why did I play it back to back? Right? In the initial clip that you heard earlier, and it was clear, this woman told this man, her husband of 3 years, but in a relationship of 5, that she still desired her previous boyfriend. Sexually, he was better. She told him he was a better man. Fellas, you will very rarely ever be her first choice. And that's something that many of you don't want to come to grips with. So when I came up with this concept of the interview, and I did that about 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, about 4 years ago. One of the things that, one reason that I do it is because, gentlemen, the women that you deal with, the women that you see, they only want to deal with the top brass of men. That's who they desire. Now, but it's two things. One, like the hypergamy part, right? Like lifestyle. Then there's the aspect of the physical desire, which is another subset of men that they physically desire. These motherfuckers ain't got to do nothing. These are the ones that become hobosexuals. They're rolling up blunts all day, playing a video game while she's hard at work. She comes home from work and she still got to cook and clean and take care of his ass, because he's going to take care of her later on in the bedroom, you know.
Got him. We fucking got him.
I'm just saying. I'm just saying, right? So, but if you're not the first choice, brothers. And this is where, when you accept the red pill, you start to recognize that, and then you assess each relationship accordingly. And that your tolerance for disrespect will go down. You understanding your worth will hit the ceiling and go through the roof, because you understand how valuable you are. And I think when men really understand how valuable they are, especially you black man, when you understand how valuable you are, you then raise the stakes in regard to who you'll even consider to be up to your standard. And I think that's one of the most important things we have to understand as black men. Because let's be clear about something else too. Nobody's manhood journey has been stunted, attacked, retarded, made retarded, like literally held back more than black men in America. And keep in mind something, man, because we look at the dysfunction of relationships in the black community and we try to look at our situation through a European lens. Even sometimes we try to look at it through other countries and other nationalities, even Africa. Like we try to, some of us try to, you know, I was one of them once upon a time, back to Africa in terms of philosophy, scope, and life. But, you know, one of the things that we have never truly had a gainful conversation about, I mean, there's been books, literature, shout out to the Black Manosphere, shout out to BJ Zipmore, master teacher, who constantly, you know, brings these relevant topics to the table. Black people weren't brought to this country as desirables. And black people never immigrated to this country. I think we really don't understand when Malcolm X say we didn't land on Plymouth Rock, Plymouth Rock landed on us. I don't really think we really understand the gravity of that phrase. Black man, you were brought here strictly for labor. Black woman, you were brought here strictly to reproduce. But black people didn't come to this country originally, and I'm not talking about before Columbus. I'm talking about during the transatlantic slave trade, which has shaped the culture and conditions in the history of this country. Black people didn't come here together. There weren't black families coming to America. Black families were stripped and ripped apart. African families, before they even left the Cape of No Hope. And then you come to America. And then some of us were able to find, our ancestors were able to bind up on those plantations. Jump the broom, if you will. But prior to desegregation, black people knew that they had to work together in an imperfect union because it was the only chance of survival. We have always been a people operating from a place of survival here in America, under attack, being warred on. That has been our plight in this country. Look at all the different laws and policies put in place. And no, black people weren't the only ones, but damn it, we were the major focus. Over 95% of all the policies put in place to destroy a people were put in place to destroy black people. You could talk about the natives and what happened to them were fucked up. But a lot of them wanted to be partners with these white folk. Let's not forget that. And I have Native American ancestry too. So, you know, shout out to the Sioux tribe. But that's not discounting what happened. That's not putting on rose-colored lenses and pretending like I don't know what happened. The 12 civilized tribes of Native Americans here. Indians that they called them at the time. Yeah. They got dealt a dirty deed. They got placed in concentration camps. They, you know what the plan was for black people post-Civil War? It was no place in America for black people. They snatched that 40 acres and a mule that was promised by one of the northern generals to you know, the blacks in that out of South Carolina and the adjacent islands that helped the revolt. That's where the 40 acres and a mule come from. But they didn't. Lincoln, President Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln, had Lincoln lived, his plan was mass deportation of all the black people back to Africa. How do you think you got the country of Liberia? How do you think you got the country of Liberia?
Got them. We fucking got them.
yo, the country of Liberia was put in place because they wanted a place to send all black people in America once our job was done on the plantations. You got to remember, Emancipation Proclamation, end of slavery, 13th Amendment. That meant that the plantation life technically was supposed to have been over. Now, we know that they resurrected it with sharecropping, which in some cases was worse than slavery. In many cases, and if you don't believe me, y'all need to do your own research on that. I don't have time to always, you know, go into lesson mode. But I'm bringing this up because we had a very interesting conversation. If you didn't check it out, make sure you go to On the Shoulders of Giants by my brother Joseph Ward, where he, my brother Patrick Irvin, and myself were dissecting the origins of the dysfunction of black families. And when we really broke it down, we broke it down in a way that many of you have never heard before. We start thinking about black families post-antebellum. We start thinking about them post-Civil War era. We don't understand, like, the concept. Like, literally, Wall Street was put together. Wall Street. The street by the wall in New York. Right there, right off of Battery Park. You can literally see the Statue of Liberty from there. In the Hudson Bay. Literally see it. Guess what? They called it the first commodity sold on Wall Street. Industrial banking takes place. The world markets take place. The first thing that was sold, the first commodity sold, was your African ancestors. Street by the wall. The North had plantations too. Philly had plantations. Benjamin Franklin, right out in Plymouth Meeting. I've been to his house. I saw the slave quarters. I saw them. They're still there. Restored and everything. Dr. Frankenstein himself. If you want to know that, you need to look up Ben Franklin. That whole lightning with a key and a kite. Think Frankenstein reanimation. Think about that. That, all right. His plots over in Britain, England. They found all kinds of cadavers and body parts in his backyard. And a lot of his work was on black people. We are still operating in dysfunction. This is why nigger culture is the culture that we're comfortable with. Because to be a nigger, you got to be desperate. To be a nigger, you literally have to be in survival mode. Niggers is always scratching and clawing, trying to find a way. And this is, you think about it. Black men didn't have no power on a plantation. And therefore, in America, there has never been an opportunity for black men to develop in its own autonomy. To black men to self-actualize, the concept crystallize. what a man is in black skin. We know what the conceptual image of men is here in America. We know what that is. I'm a protector. I'm a provider. I'm a leader. We know all that shit. But when you try to put that on a black man, what you're really doing is putting a black face on a white man. You know, don't tell me I ain't preaching. Black men have never been taught how to be men. Not black men. Because to understand that you're a black man, every show, what do I say at the end? War and peace. Because if you want peace, you better be willing to wage war for it. Why do you think I say that? Because understanding your plight as black men is to understand your perpetual war every day, every second of your life. The second you wake up in the morning, sometimes it's waiting in your living room for you. Sometimes it's like waiting in your bedroom with you. And I'm not saying that to say that black women are the enemy of black men, but black women have learned how to weaponize, control, and powers the white man's powers, wield them to put black men in their place. Dr. Tiasan Johnson is developing a vocabulary for this right now. One of the key terms he's been able to come up with was blue leashing. When black women can call the white man to punish black men for not being subservient to them. That's why you go to child support, you go to court. That's why a woman will lie and say, domestically speaking, you've abused her. Because she knows. And they used to call it back in the day, I'm going to get that white man on you. They literally used to say that. You go back to the plantation. If the headmistress on the plantation had any problem with a brother, she told that white man. And that brother was strung up, a lot of times losing his life. We don't want to talk about that. Like I said, no rose-colored lenses over here. So, brothers, you have to understand, like, in terms of, like, manhood, black man, like, the red pill journey is a necessity for you. Because then you'll truly start to understand your value and your worth to the world. You'd be less likely to throw your lives away. You'd be less likely to work yourselves to the nubs for people who don't appreciate you. And just because somebody says they appreciate you doesn't mean it. It's an action word. It's a verb. You have to show us the appreciation, consideration, respect. There's respect to do to a dog. One question I asked before I go is, has anybody really asked black women why they're so angry with us? Why the disdain is there? I kind of know the answer to that. It's because, black man, you can never elevate her status to that of a white woman living in a white man's world. I said it. I ain't the first one to say it. Like I said, shout out to BGS Sidmore. I give credit where credit is due. Prove me wrong. There's a reason why there's so many weaves and so many attempts to distance themselves from their natural black characteristics and things of that nature. It ain't because of black men. I know for a fact that brothers on a whole really settle for women wearing that shit, but they don't like it. So with all that said, family, appreciate y'all pulling up. Appreciating you every weekend. We're going to be back. I'm actually stronger than ever. So, as I always say, y'all, take care of yourselves and war and peace. Because if you want peace, you better be willing to wage war for it. And with that, I am out of here.